Blog Talk Radio.
All right.
I'm so happy that we didn't talk during the little Blog Talk Radio intro.
I really wanted to.
We start off with, all right.
Yeah, I just wait for her to be done now. It's like, you said your piece. Move on. Hello, this is the 124th Over the Monster podcast, many of which you can actually listen to. I'm Matt Corey, nowhere near the cat box, but near a cat, oddly. Or not oddly. And co-hosting today is Mark Normandin. Mark Normandin of the internets. Say hello, Mark Normandin of the internets.
I really wanted to use a hacky joke there, but I'll save it. I'll save my hacky jokes for later, I guess.
Okay, so, yeah, anywho, I apologize for, I don't even know, the technical problems we had last week when we did the podcast, which I thought was a fun discussion that Mark and I had, but I went back to listen to it, and the audio cuts in and out, and in and out, and in and out, and it really wasn't anything that we were doing. We recorded it just like we always have since we moved over to Blog Talk Radio. So I'm totally blaming Blog Talk Radio for that. But
no, they can probably hear us in some form right now, and now they're gonna screw with it.
I'm angry
because
at them.
Because we blame them.
Stop screwing with our podcast, Blog Talk Radio. It's actually a really user-friendly interface they have, and I like it a lot. It's much better than the way we used to do it, but if people can't hear the damn podcast, then there's no point. So hopefully this works out better this week. We've moved things around a little bit, and we're optimistic that you will be able to hear us. And if you're not, there's one other sort of larger fix we can do, and after that, I will become furious and break things. So we're two steps away from furious and break things. Hopefully we won't get there. Anyway, so my apologies for last week. Hopefully this is better. Moving on to the Red Sox. The Red Sox won yesterday. We're recording this Wednesday, April 22nd. And the Red Sox beat the Rays 1-0 on an unearned run. As a result of a double play that the Rays probably should have turned, but didn't. And this isn't Red Sox related, but it occurs to me, wow, the Rays look like crap.
Well, that's what happens when a third of your roster is on the DL.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's certainly part of it. And Chris Archer was really good. And I think, you know, we were talking about him at the beginning of the season, and, you know, speculating that he may just well be the best pitcher, best starter, at least, in the American League East. And I think the other guy that I argued for potentially being as good or better was Marcus Stroman, and he's not going to throw a pitch this year, so that's not happening. I mean, do you think that the Rays get markedly better when they get, you know, who is it, Kevin Kiermaier and James Loney back?
I mean, they're missing like three of their starting infielders. They're missing almost an entire rotation. They're missing Kiermaier. It's not just like one or two guys. That's not their roster, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it's just kind of an unfortunate thing where a lot of that's supposed to be together pretty soon, and it's going to have to be because it doesn't matter how strong their second half surge is if they're just buried in the first, you know,
right,
5-6 weeks of the season. So I think they'll be better, but it really depends on how well they can kind of tread water here while they're playing with, you know, parts of a major league roster.
Yeah, and they actually, I mean, they're sort of benefited by the fact that there really doesn't appear to be a great team right now in the American League East. I mean, the Red Sox starting pitching could come together, and that would probably vault them, you know, into you know, a more legitimate spot atop the division in terms of overall talent. But as things stand right now, you know, the Rays definitely have the worst offense in the division. That will improve if they get guys back healthy. But it's not like they're getting, you know, a whole lot of guys back. Although I guess you could make the claim that since Evan Longoria has been a giant sinkhole, you know, once he comes around, which, you know, he's Evan Longoria, you got to think he's going to come around. Once he comes around, that'll be a big improvement for them also. So I thought
about them kind of, they're like the opposite of the Red Sox, where the lineup really just had to be okay.
Yeah.
Because if the pitching was healthy and everyone in the rotation did what you thought they were going to do, you know, like the Red Sox lineup, like they were going to have the best rotation in the AL East. The problem is that most of that rotation's on the DL right now. So, you know, Matt Moore can only dig them out of so deep of a hole. Same with Alex Cobb.
Right.
You know, it's just Chris Archer can't do it by himself sort of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. excuse me.
Although they're getting, I think they're getting Drew Smyly back on Friday. So the Sox will miss him, but the Rays will have him back before the end of the month.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of have to think that all these teams are going to kind of stick around. You know, and I was going to, I mean, we were going to talk about the Red Sox rotation, and I think we'll get into that in a second. But, you know, from an overall standpoint, you know, the Red Sox don't appear shockingly better than any other team. I mean, they're 4-0 in one-run games. You know, their bullpen has been pretty good. It seems to me, you know, with a couple, it's kind of funny. I guess the first time through the order, the starting rotation was really good, and the bullpen was a little shaky. And then things kind of reversed themselves the second and third times through the starting rotation.
Yeah, I still don't think we've seen what the pitching staff looks like, you know, from top to bottom.
Hopefully not. but yeah, let's do that. So let's talk a little bit about the starters, and you know, Clay Buchholz against the Phillies was tremendous, and then he was horrendous against the Yankees, and then against the Nationals, I think he was his next start. Is that right?
Orioles.
He didn't look so. He was kind of in between, but I think he got a little unlucky, and he seemed to indicate that in post game comments. He gave out a ton of singles. Some were hit hard, some were not. It seemed to me that he was, you know, a little bit the victim of bad luck. But
it didn't show up in the box score though, which is kind of the thing. Because
yeah, he gave up, you know, still 11 hits in like 5 innings or something, or six.
Yeah, six innings, and he gave up 2 runs.
Right.
A thing that people kind of forget about Buchholz, because a lot of the time when he lets up base runners, it's because he's in disaster mode. But Buchholz, you know, regularly with base runners, like a couple of guys will get hits, and then he gets out of the inning. He pitches really well with men on base. So kind of a credit to him situation where he kept putting men on base either because of his own doing or some bad luck, but he kept shutting it down basically every single time.
Yeah, right.
And he looked good doing it too, you know, other than the singles. Like he struck out a lot of guys. He had his control. Just, you know, he missed a couple of times and it only resulted in singles. And I don't know, I still feel good about him. You know, it was a horrible disaster start against the Yankees. But we're still at the time of year where, you know, Cole Hamels and Clayton Kershaw look like they're awful. So.
Right.
And not that Buchholz is one of those guys, but it's just like, yeah, kind of cool it on the hot takes with Buchholz.
So you wanted to discuss the sort of, I guess, overreaction to, you know, 2.5 times through the rotation. Are there things you still want to say that we haven't said yet, Mark?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of just, you know, we talked last week where it's like, oh, yeah, they look pretty good through the rotation the first time. And there are going to be stretches like that where they look great. They look unstoppable. And there could be stretches. And we warned that there are also going to be stretches where they don't look so good. And then, hey, look at that. It happened immediately after. But, you know, it's so early in the season. You know, they haven't even been through the rotation 3 times, like you said. It's the same guys that that you felt okay about in February and March. You know, you didn't feel super, super confident in them. But, you know, it's just too early to be freaking out. Like, the Rockies were just in first place a few days ago. I mean, not first. Yeah, they were in first place a few days ago. They were still in line for, like, a wild card spot, you know, with that old stupid saying, if the season ended tomorrow.
Right.
You know, the Braves were in first place. Like,
The Astros are in first place right now.
yeah, the Rockies and Braves and Astros all look like they'd be playoff teams right now. So, please, give me your Red Sox rotation hot takes. And there's also a level of a lot of people really had no confidence in the Sox rotation, whether it was for
That's what
fair
this
reasons
is.
or unfair reasons.
Yeah, I think that's what it is, Mark. I think this is confirming a pre-existing bias.
Yeah, and it's like, okay, do you want to double down on that right now, 3 weeks into the season? Because go ahead. Like, if they turn it, you know, I don't know. It's just not a comfortable thing. I'm not denying that the rotation could be an absolute mess. It could be awful. But it's just so early in the season to be kind of going that way and really, really sticking with that angle. I don't know. It's not like the Sox have no options that they can do something to fix this if it does turn out to be a problem. And I don't know. You see a lot of well, should have traded for Cole Hamels kind of talk out there. Like, okay, so they should have given up Mookie Betts and Swihart, or one of the two, and a huge prospect package for 5 years of something, because the first 2.5 weeks didn't go as planned.
Well, it's also worth pointing out that if you're valuing 2.5 weeks so incredibly highly, that Cole Hamels has been awful so far. So
Yeah, I know, it's just.
from that standpoint, he would fit really well in the Red Sox bullpen, in the Red Sox rotation. And I think that, you know, the other guy that the Red Sox were mentioned with, Zimmerman, Jordan, I always want to call him Ryan, Jordan Zimmerman of the Nationals has had a similarly bad start. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but that's what this podcast should be called. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but last time I looked, he had some rough starts. One of those, I believe, came against the Red Sox. So, at least from the standpoint of, you know, this is important information, then, you know, training for those two guys would not have helped, at least, you know, through the first 22 days of April.
Agreed. And you know, it's funny, a lot of this screaming about the Red Sox rotation was coming during a weekend when they were facing one of the best hitting teams in the league. Had the game where they gave up 8 runs. That happened, not denying it. But they also gave up 4, 2, and 1 in the other 3 games. But all anyone wants to talk about is the one where they gave up 8. You know, the Orioles are really good. That's the team I'm most concerned about in the AL East. You know, they can pitch, they can hit. There's probably going to be a lot of high-scoring games between those two teams, though, because they're both better at hitting than they are at pitching. So games like the 8-3 loss, those are going to happen. It's going to happen to the Orioles, too. It did happen on Monday. They lost 7-1, and they didn't even finish the game. So it's you know, it's so early in the year, and to just go to that kind of old standby, if this happened in June, nobody would notice. But it's April. So everyone's ERA looks terrible. You know, you've got guys who have had two pretty good starts and one awful start, and all their numbers still kind of look like that awful start. So.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean the big matchup today in baseball is Dodgers Giants. It's Clayton Kershaw against Madison Bumgarner. And both those guys, I just closed it because I'm an idiot, but I think both those guys have a 5-run ERAs or worse.
And it's must-see television as far as baseball is concerned.
Well, yeah, I mean they're damn good. They've had a couple bad starts, and you know Bumgarner threw 1,000 innings last year, so I don't think it's entirely shocking that he would have a bit of a rough start to the season. But yeah, I think you know in the absence of better information, people look at you know the little bit they have, and I'm not you know I'm guilty of it sometimes myself, but they look at the little bit they have and they you know they extrapolate it out to be meaningful when you know if we think about it for a second, we know it's not. I really do think that it's especially prevalent when it's you know when it confirms what we already thought.
Oh yeah, we ran something at SB Nation the second day of the season, I think. The second day of the season, that was essentially like, here are all the preconceived notions that have been confirmed by game one.
Right, right.
You know, and you know, you're going to hit some of those. At the end of the year, you're going to be like, yeah, see, I was right.
Mm-hmm.
But you kind of look like an asshole, and you're going to be wrong for most of them. And the thing you were right about, you're probably not right about it for the right reason.
That's my favorite. When you make a call about something and it comes out your way, but there's no possible way you would have predicted the exact sequence of events that created what you predicted to be true. Anyway.
So that's kind of my take on that. And as I had mentioned before, you know, the Sox have options. They have things they can do if it does turn out that the rotation is a mess or is in need of something.
Well, let's get into that a little bit. So, I mean, the Red Sox have a rotation right now of, you know, Porcello and Buchholz and Miley and Masterson and Kelly. And, you know, they've got Buchholz signed. I think his contract expires this year, but they've got two, at this point, pretty team-friendly one-year options on Buchholz for 2016 and 2017. And then, you know, they gave Wade Miley a deal that buys out, I want to say, one or two free agent years.
1 year. It's an option.
Okay. But they've got him locked up for about $20 million over the next, what, four seasons, something like that. You know, everyone knows Porcello is locked up for – it's actually five seasons because the extension doesn't kick in until next year. So, you know, it's five seasons at, like, $92 million in total, something like that. And so the only guys that they aren't committed to beyond this season at this point are Joe Kelly, who they have under team control, but they don't have signed, and Justin Masterson, who will be a free agent following the season. And, you know, somewhat humorously, those are the guys who are – oh, at least results-wise, are you know the two best pitchers on the roster. If you look at FIP, Masterson has a 282 FIP, Kelly is a 331. Actually, Buchholz is a 307. So forget I said that. but in any case, if you were to go and make changes, you know, at some point in the future, say before the trade deadline, the two, you know, and performance continues in roughly this vein, the two guys that you would pick out to be the most easily moved out of the rotation are probably the two better pitchers.
I'd say you could move Wiley, combining his first name and last name. you could move Miley down to Pawtucket. He signed, but he has his options. And if he's really still a mess, you know, mid-May, late May or whatever, you just swap him with someone who's at Pawtucket and give him some time to work some things out and, you know, hope a little better in the interim and he can sort some things out as far as, like, a short-term thing goes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, someone could get hurt from that group too, which you obviously don't want, but it's a thing that'll happen.
So So that's one way to make room. You know, I think another way is a trade. I mean, there's a couple. I mean, Porcello's not going anywhere. You know, it's very unlikely Miley would be dealt. Kelly potentially they could trade. Buchholz they could certainly trade especially if he's pitching well. But at that point, why would you trade him?
You want to keep that guy for.
Right. But the other guy is Masterson, who's on a 1 year deal. So depending on, you know, what you're doing, if you're going after like a Cueto or something like that, you know, maybe that's where you upgrade. I mean, Masterson's a guy who has some obvious flaws, and maybe it's worth some prospects to correct those flaws, even if the results are still there. So maybe there's some sort of way to move things around there. But actually, Mark, rather than just yapping at you, I wanted to ask you, I mean, the Red Sox have some guys in AAA who are intriguing and some guys who are in AAA who are both intriguing and are performing well, at least in the very beginnings of this season. Do you see anyone from Pawtucket coming up and taking on a role in the Red Sox rotation? Or do you think they would go out and maybe move a guy, you know, from Pawtucket to get a Cueto or something like that?
I mean, if it's July and they still need a trade, then yeah, I see them making some kind of major trade for someone like Cueto. Locking up Porcello does give them this little side benefit of not having to worry about, you know, spending the winter trying to lock up Cueto or not being able to.
Mm-hmm.
So you can really treat him as a rental and the price will be high, but you know, if their record is good enough and you know that the rotation is going to be the thing that would keep you from winning the World Series, you know, that's kind of you've got a million prospects and you got to use them on something, whether it's the major league roster or it's to acquire major league players. So I don't think the Sox would have any problem doing that if they had to. But in the time before that, I think Brian Johnson is probably the guy, which is maybe surprising given that he's maybe the third best starter they have at Pawtucket.
You think he would Henry, say that they would call up to put in the rotation?
Yeah, they would call up Brian Johnson.
Okay.
Henry Owens he's going to need some time in AAA. It's probably the first real challenge that he's going to have. You know, he hasn't really been challenged by the hitters he's been facing since he first started. And a lot of those challenges were actually just like Henry Owens trying to solve himself more than the hitters he was facing.
I think that's actually the best analysis of Henry Owens that I've ever heard, Mark, because that really boils it down. I think that's exactly Henry Owens' issue. Like, he can absolutely get players out if he doesn't get in his own way.
Yeah, so learning the challenges of AAA hitters is kind of key for his development. You don't really want to interrupt it. There's no reason to rush him. You know, he's not a guy who's going to change a rotation because he's so great. He's a guy who's going to help, you know, when he's at his best in his major league career, when he gets there, he's going to be a guy who helps you hold down the middle of your rotation most likely.
Mm-hmm.
So this isn't bringing up, you know, Carlos Rodon to the bullpen and then moving him to the rotation eventually because you think he might pull a Sonny Gray and be able to help lead your rotation out of the gate. So he's just not that kind of pitcher. So don't interrupt his development when there's kind of long-term benefits to keeping him there until he sorted some things out. And the same goes for Eduardo Rodriguez, who I think is going by Eddie now.
I like that.
So
I don't
Eddie Rodriguez.
Like Eduardo, but I like the name Eddie.
You know, he just got to AAA. He's been there even less time than Owens, and his ceiling is higher than Owens. So maybe he does turn out to be one of those guys who hits the majors and just hits the ground running. But, you know, he hasn't been there long enough. The league hasn't seen him a couple of times, you know, been able to see if he's adjusting to them, they're adjusting to him, that sort of thing. So he's another guy you could probably use most of the year in the minors. I think they're both good candidates to come up late in the season and maybe help the bullpen just to kind of get their feet wet sort of thing. And maybe one of them ends up, you know, if you get to that point where the playoffs are a thing.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is maybe good for that kind of role, but both lefties are probably going to spend most of the year in AAA and should.
So, Mark,
Johnson,
it's fine. I just have an important question to ask you. What's your opinion on Eduardo?
No, we can't do that.
Okay, moving on.
Brian Johnson's kind of a different animal. You know, he was a guy who was drafted in 2012 with the idea being he was going to rush through the system.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't going to see much of a challenge in the minors at pretty much any level because he was just too polished, too advanced. And while his ceiling is lower than both of Owens and Rodriguez, there's a better chance of him finding immediate success in the majors, most likely, just because of the kind of pitcher he is. You know, this is a guy who, even though he had a season interrupted by a shoulder injury a few years ago, he's rocketed just through the system. He threw 37 innings for High A Salem and then went to Portland and led the Eastern League in ERA. So just no problem adjusting. Very advanced, very polished. He has four pitches. None of them are plus or anything like that. He doesn't have an obvious out pitch, but he knows where to put the ball, and he has fantastic control. And it's early at Pawtucket, but you can already see him kind of carving guys up the same way. So his first real challenge will come in the majors. So it's a little different situation than Owen's. So if they need a guy to come in for more than a couple starts, you know, more than like what a Stephen Wright should do, Johnson's probably that guy.
So far, Johnson's thrown 16 innings in three starts. He's got a 56 ERA. That's 0.56. He's given up one run. He's walked four guys, and he's struck out 18. He's looked pretty solid. He's not on the 40 man. Rodriguez is, and Owens is not. So yeah, that's even more credence to your Owens is going to stay in AAA for a while argument. But I think that it would depend on how long, you know, how serious an injury it is, because you know, if you're putting to bring Johnson up, you've got to put him on the 40 man, and to do that, you got to take someone off, and when you do that, you know, you're losing talent, so there's a trade there.
Yeah, but you know, if you're getting Brian Johnson because you need him in your rotation, you chance losing Zeke Spruill to waivers.
I'm against that.
Well, too bad.
I
why do you hate winning?
I just love Zeke Spruill.
I mean, yeah, that is the one kind of stumbling block, is that they will need a 40 man spot, but
I mean, there are guys on the 40 man that you might not lose too much sleep over dropping.
Tommy Lane's on the 40 right now. And Tommy Lane's job is, please come to the majors when three other guys we want in the majors are hurt.
Right, right.
You know, so he's kind of way back on that list. And that's another, you know, mentioning earlier, you need a lefty in the pen.
Right.
Well, Brian Johnson probably doesn't need these innings in AAA, so if you're done with him in the rotation, put him in the bullpen. And then you are using the 40-man spot. It's not just a temporary thing.
I don't think... I think at least initially a call-up of Edwardy is more likely, just for the 40-man reasons.
Well, he just got to AAA, though, and, you know, he's a guy who just had trouble in AA at the start of last year. I don't think they're going to want to rush him. Just kind of keep him in place until he's exactly what they want.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think there's arguments on both sides. But, you know, the 40-man is a bit of a stumbling block, and you know how the Red Sox are about, you know, talent and holding on to guys when they can. And this is an opportunity for them to – I'm not saying it's the right or the wrong move. I'm just saying, you know, holding on to a guy versus not. I think, it depends on the scouting too, like what the scouts think that those two guys can, you know, would do in the majors. And I don't have any insight into that beyond what the numbers say, which – you know, they both look pretty darn good in AAA. So, I think, is there anything else we need to say about the rotation other than, you know, it's still super early and, you know, they're not this bad.
No, I mean, it's early. They have options if they, you know, once it's not early.
Right.
Whether it's trades or promotions or whatnot. So, yeah, and hey, they're in first place right now, so be thankful that they've managed to pull out some wins that maybe they don't deserve, because if the pitching improves and the lineup still isn't where it's supposed to be and they're still scoring runs in bunches,
right?
You know, this could be a really great team, but and without the pitching even being great. So I don't know, give it some time. It's April 22nd.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think when you look at ERAs, it's kind of a terrifying, list. But when you look at FIP, things get a little bit better. You know, they for whatever reason, whether it's luck, whether it's just the way they've pitched, but it gives me some hope that that they pitch better than their ERA indicates. So I put out a bit of a call on Twitter to see if there's anything we should discuss. And I got some interesting stuff back, so I wanted to throw some stuff at you that you probably haven't seen to just get your initial reaction, if I may.
Sure.
This harkens back to our old podcast, Mark, where it was like, ask Mark Normandin questions for 2 hours.
The old podcast with the same name.
I don't know what you're talking about. So the first one comes from Adam Spearbrecker, and he asks, what are the best ways to rotate Brock Holt's glove into the lineup every day or close to it? I'm not sure Brock Holt needs to be in the lineup every day, but I'll throw that question at you anyway. Go ahead.
I mean, I think he should be when he's hitting like this. He's kind of clearly a guy who gets in the zone.
Mm-hmm.
And you just can't, you know, he can't make an out for a couple weeks at a time. So, you know, they see these guys in batting practice. They see them, you know, when they get their at-bats, and they really know. They can tell kind of when maybe something's coming on. And you're going to be wrong about that sometimes, obviously, because it's obvious. It's not an exact science or anything like that. But I have no problem with, you know, trying to rotate Brock Holt in when he's on a tear like this. If nothing else, it gives these guys rest. It's a really long season. No one needs to be playing 160 games a year. So what they've been doing seems to be working, you know, just giving Xander a day off, giving Pedroia a day off, throwing Holt in the outfield every now and then. You know, everyone could use a day. And they're lucky that they have a guy who can handle pretty much every position on the diamond. I mean, he looked pretty decent at shortstop yesterday.
Yeah, he sure did.
So if he can handle short, and he managed to make center field work even when he was playing next to Johnny Gomes last year, you know, get him in wherever you can.
Yeah, I agree. I think you know, I'm less of the whole hot hitter thing, but I agree. I mean, you know, his glove really does play just about anywhere you put him. It's pretty amazing. And so, yeah, he's a great guy to rotate in and out of the lineup when someone needs a day of rest or, you know, isn't feeling well for whatever reason. I agree. You know, I don't think we nitpick on Farrell, a fair bit, at least, you know, if not on this podcast, you know, Red Sox Twitter, et cetera. And, you know, some of it's deserved. But I think he's done a pretty good job of, you know, putting Holt into the lineup and making the whole setup work. It's sort of bizarre because, you know, the Red Sox have one of the more inflexible lineups because they have one of the only guys who plays DH exclusively in David Ortiz. Most teams have sort of, you know, for whatever reason, moved beyond having an exclusive DH. But the Red Sox have sort of, I don't know how to say it, but, it, you know, it gone back and sort of oddly improved that flexibility that, you know, that sort of re-added it by just having Brock Holt. You know, they don't need a backup third baseman or backup second baseman or backup shortstop or backup first baseman or backup outfielder. They have Brock Holt. They can just put him anywhere.
Yeah, and it also helps where it limits the amount of times they might have to, like, run to put Alan Craig in right field or something.
Well, that's an interesting...
Because you can move some stuff around and...
Yeah. I mean, but that's an interesting point because having Brock Holt really makes having Alan Craig completely redundant.
Yeah, Alan Craig is such a play for 2016. And it's kind of tough. It's like... They have to hold on to him if they want him for later.
Right.
But they don't really need him now at all.
No, not at all.
But, you know, next year there's just – you don't know if Napoli's going to – you know, let's just say, especially with Napoli not hitting right now.
Right.
If Napoli doesn't hit
– Yeah.
And he's what, 33, 34?
Something like that.
So it wouldn't be the most surprising thing in the world if he just all of a sudden wasn't who he was anymore.
He's 33.
So, you know, next year, you know, Daniel Nava played first base.
Right.
On Tuesday night. Nava Craig is a pretty good first baseman. And they can both play the outfield if you do need to play them both for one day because, you know, injuries or whatever elsewhere.
You know what?
They're not that expensive combined.
True.
So
I wonder about Hanley, though. I mean, I was really optimistic about him as an outfielder, you know, coming off of shortstop, being able to handle left field. But so far, he's been kind of a disaster out there. Now, it's been, you know, it's really early, and he's almost never played the outfield before. So there's, you know, there's still learning time, et cetera, et cetera. No one's casting final judgments yet. But, you know, if we get into July and he still hasn't figured out the outfield, maybe there's a scenario where they move him to first base next year, especially considering the number of playable outfielders they have.
Yeah, it's definitely a possibility. But, you know, Alan Craig kind of comes into play for that, too, because if his bat doesn't come back all the way, him and Nava are still in a platoon somewhere. So it's just this weird situation where they need to know if Alan Craig's good, so they need to play him, but they're trying to win, so they can't really use Alan Craig now. You know, it's tough, and at some point they might have, you know, if Victorino doesn't hit and they need to call up Rusney, somebody needs to go, and it's not going to be Holt, and it's probably not going to be Nava because he costs nothing, and they have him for as long as Craig, I think. And I'm sure if they wanted to sign him longer, that wouldn't be a problem, you know?
Yeah.
And he'd still cost less. So I don't know. You know, the end result might be they end up getting less than they wanted to for Craig, but they tried their hardest to, you know, wait and make sure.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It's tough. I agree with you on Hanley, by the way. Like, he could move to first base at some point, but I would like to see a little more time. He does not go back on the ball very well. He doesn't seem to have as much problem coming in, but yeah, going back is probably going to take some time. It must be really difficult to try and learn to play the outfield in front of the most imposing wall that exists in the game.
Yeah, I wonder if that makes it easier or more difficult. I mean, I could see why it would be more difficult, but it's also a lot less space to cover, you know?
Yeah, but I think it hurts going back, you know? So I think coming in, we'll probably see him get comfortable, but it's going to take him some time before he's, you know, good playing balls off the wall or going back and knowing where it is and all that.
Yeah.
It's just going to take some repetition. And, you know, if he doesn't move to first base, well, he's got a few years to figure it out. So
yeah,
it might be ugly every now and then, but hey, as long as he keeps hitting, he can put up with it too.
So on to the next question, and I think we agree on what the Red Sox are doing with Holt.
I didn't mean to imply like too heavily that I'm into playing the hot hand or something. It's more just like, I don't mind if they're doing what they do now where, you know, Holt's hitting.
Yeah.
So, hey, give guys rest a little more often in times like this. And otherwise, you know, if it's just a spell where he's not hitting at all and all he's bringing is his glove, then, I don't know, maybe that's the time where you lean on your regulars a little harder.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think the danger comes, you know, when, you know, I mean, the obvious example is with Holt himself, who, you know, last year had an 834 OPS through the first 61 games, and then a 548 OPS through the next 45. And, you know, at that point, he had kind of gained John Farrell's trust and spent a lot of time in the leadoff position. Now, you could argue, okay, the Red Sox were sort of out of it by that point, or at least for a lot of that time. But still, I think it was, you know, certainly a suboptimal usage. I think that's kind of the danger. I mean, you know,
the difference this year too is they're not trying to find out what they have. They're trying to win games.
Right.
So if Holt's not hitting, I doubt he continues to lead off.
You'd hope so.
I would think. Ben wrote a good piece on the site. Ben Buchanan wrote a good piece on the site on Tuesday. That whole Brian Price tirade.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of brought up a reminder for Red Sox fans who are really hard on Farrell or don't like the answers he gives sometimes. And it's just kind of a big part of his job is protecting his players. So sometimes they're just going to say some things where it's really, they're lying.
Right.
But it sounds good and it, you know, their players are happy that they've been protected or something. You know, you can't really just come out and say, well, this guy legit sucks against this dude, and he just looks like a clown.
Right.
He doesn't look like a major league. So you instead you're like, oh, well, you know, it's just a day of rest, and we want to get Brock Holt in the lineup today. So, it can be infuriating. I know, to like see that, but there's just not much to read into it. And maybe there is, but I feel like Farrell, you know, he works with Charrington and company, and we think they're smart, and I don't think they'd be so super, super into Farrell if you know, he was an idiot.
Yeah, I mean, Chad Finn has talked about this a fair amount, and I'm really with him. I mean, you know, a lot of the stuff that Farrell has done that's been kind of out there, you know, in 2013, a lot of it worked. In 2014, a lot of it didn't. I mean, we all probably remember Farrell leaving Brandon Workman in to hit for himself during a World Series game. And I don't
think that
was stupid. So, period.
I didn't say he was the best tactical manager.
I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just saying I think you know that the jury is still out on what kind of, you know, tactician Farrell is, you know, how much he's learned from his time managing.
They're all bad tacticians.
It does sort of seem that way sometimes. but I am inclined and you know to agree with you. It's worth giving them the benefit of the doubt, especially when smart people think that he's doing a good job. So a lot of times that's good enough for me, which is sort of weird because I strive to back up, you know, things that I write, you know, with statistical arguments. So it's odd to fall back on, well, Ben Charrington likes him, so good enough, done, you know?
Yeah, it's just, you know, there's only so many statistical arguments you can make for a manager, especially when so much of their value is wrapped up in other things.
Right, right.
I mean, Ron Washington was a pretty terrible tactical manager. I don't think anybody would argue that. I'm not even sure Ron would argue that. His GM probably wouldn't have argued that.
Yeah.
But, you know, his players loved him, and he did a good job rotating people in and out of the lineup, and managed to be the guy who kept Michael Young happy, even though he kept getting bounced all over the diamond as his talent, you know, vanished in front of him.
Oh, Michael Young is such a team player, though.
But it's just, you know, I think that's the kind of thing where it's we want to just be like, oh, it doesn't matter, just what they do matters. But, you know, the team really likes Holt. Like, I think the front office likes Holt. The actual team, the players like Holt. The coaching staff likes him. And they think of him as a little spark plug guy. And you know what? Since he's a good player, cool.
Yeah.
If he was doing that, if John Farrell's Binky was this awful player, it would be one thing. But
and we've seen that before, not necessarily with Farrell, but with other managers who sort of fall in love with a certain guy who,
you know,
very blatantly is not good.
So at least Farrell's little crushes tend to be for good players. And I still argue, we don't have time to get into this on the podcast, but I'm still the one who thinks that playing Gomes against the Tigers in the ALCS was a good idea instead of Nava.
Well, when the Red Sox fall hopelessly out of it in August, we can have that conversation. I hope we never have to have that conversation. Actually, I'd almost rather have that conversation with you not on the podcast.
Yeah. No, that's probably a good place. I think we've had it before. So whatever.
But,
yeah, what's the next question? I realize I interrupted you asking the next question to talk about it for another 10 minutes. But
No, it's fine. If there's more to talk about it, I'm happy to talk about it. So Aaron asks, have the Sox been super lucky through 3 weeks? It seems like a lot of errors have helped them in multiple games. I tried to look up how many unearned runs the Red Sox have scored, and oddly, I actually couldn't find that information. It's very easy to see.
I think it was 19 on
they scored 19 unearned runs?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's 19.
Holy shit.
I mean, it's a lot, but part of it has also been they've been disruptive on the base pass and things like that, so it's not all.
Well, yeah. It's not utterly luck or bad defense, but that's still a tremendous amount. I mean, the team has scored 71 runs, for context. Yeah. 19 is, you know, more than a quarter of what.
Well, here's the other thing, too. You know, unearned runs is not because errors are so stupid.
Yes.
You know, you have an error at the start of the inning that puts one runner on.
Right.
And then you score 8 runs in a row without making an out.
Right. Those are all unearned.
Those are all unearned runs because, right. Man, that never would have happened if that first guy hadn't dropped the baseball. So, yeah, it's. I mean, there's some luck to it, too. But the Sox have also been unlucky in other areas. So not everyone in the lineup is hitting. You know, Mookie's not hitting yet. Victorino's not hitting yet. David Ortiz isn't hitting yet. Mike Napoli isn't hitting yet.
You know,
Pablo Sandoval isn't hitting yet.
It is remarkable.
And they're still scoring tons of runs.
Hitting. Yeah. Like, they have 71 runs scored, which is real quick. 1, 2, 3, 4. Yeah, 4 teams in the American League have scored more than 71. The Yankees are at 70. And they've done that with Napoli at a 35 OPS plus, Betts at a 69, Victorino at a 36, and, you know, Sandoval and David Ortiz at about 5% below average. Yeah, it's pretty insane.
Well, I don't think of it as luck so much as things balancing out, you know?
Yeah.
It's kind of like with the pitch, you know, the pitching hasn't been super great yet, but it's been good enough in most cases. And just, hey, man, take those wins when you got them because we haven't seen the actual Red Sox yet. You know, they might – it's way too early to say they wouldn't leave first place or something, but, you know, there's a chance that they don't leave first place because the team does come together the way it did. And part of the reason they were there in the first place, yeah, it's those 19 unearned runs.
Mm-hmm.
But I think to say they've been lucky to get them is probably pushing it a little. You know, it's just some early season madness.
I can think of 2 or 3 games that could have easily swung the other direction if the other team had fielded the ball properly. But yeah, right. That's a.
I can also think of a Red Sox game where, if, you know, someone on their team had fielded the ball properly.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. So,
you know, they've got 2 outfielders out there right now who are both learning how to play the outfield.
Right,
so
right, yeah, no, that's absolutely.
It's worked both ways.
Sosh Baseball, which I think is affiliated with Sons of Sam Horn, asks possible consequences or potential retaliation due to the Red Sox getting a reputation on the base paths. And this is, I think, in reference to Mookie's slide yesterday in the Rays game that broke up the double play and allowed Hannigan, I think, to score what ended up being the only run of that game. I don't really have a tremendous, I mean, I know Farrell talked about it post game and said that he was hoping that, you know, second baseman and shortstops on the other teams would, you know, develop some fear of Red Sox barreling down the base paths. But I'm not, I just don't know if that's really a thing that matters, is going to make any kind of difference, or if it's going to be any different than any other team.
Yeah, I mean, the thing with, like, Brett Lowry just happening, that was, a specific team getting mad,
mm-hmm.
For a specific reason, and, you know, they thought Lowry came in a little too hard. So no one on the Sox has come in that hard, although Pablo did try and punch a dude right in the nuts.
Yeah. I'm not sure he tried to punch him in the nuts.
he threw out with both fists in the direction of them.
He did, and there's no question that that's what it looked like. I'm just thinking that when you're sliding hard into second base, it's probably difficult to also punch someone right in the balls.
Well, for you and me, maybe, but Pablo's a professional athlete.
He's trained to punch people in the balls when he's...
He might. You don't know how many times he's done that in his backyard. How many reps has he done? So, I don't think there'll be any retaliation. I think if someone comes up with their spikes up a little too hard and hits someone in the ankle, maybe, yeah, that'll flare something up. But if it's just a series of, like, last night where it's like, oh, shit, got to get out of the way.
Yeah.
You know, it's not going to happen. There's not going to be a big deal because other teams want to do it too.
Yeah. And
it's the kind of thing announcers are going to say, that was a good hard slide.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's what people said about Mookie yesterday. It just happened to be a good hard slide that resulted in throwing the ball into space.
Yeah, yeah. If you know, if the shortstop, I think, you know, makes a better throw, then all of Farrell doesn't get asked that question, and Mookie doesn't get lauded for a hard slide, whether he made a hard slide or not. So anyway, I don't see it as any kind of thing unless you do it wrong, unless there's a slide where you injure somebody or I don't know, punch someone in the balls. That would be silly. Why would you do that?
That's in the backyard, man. I'm telling you.
The last one is from Jeremy Forsyth. And he says, please discuss the starting pitcher's ridiculous low strand rate, which he says is 62.6. For me, it's just early. It's the kind of thing that, over 162 games, that'll probably bounce back up in the direction of 70, which is roughly league average.
We kind of already answered that
right earlier
unintentionally, where it's early and they've had some bad luck.
Yeah.
It all comes back.
I think
we hope it's bad luck.
right. Yeah. And I haven't looked, last year to see, I know there are probably pitchers who go through a whole year, with really low strand rates. That certainly does happen. I think Clay Buchholz has done it before, or Buchholz has had high strand rates. Sorry.
Yeah, historically he's been a high strand rate guy.
So, that have made him look really good. And he was really good. Anyway,
if he's doing it all the time, it's not making him look good. It's because he is good.
Right. So we've got a couple more minutes here, and let's see, what else did you want to talk? Oh, you wanted to talk about when is the time that you would bring up Roosny? And so the background is, Victorino is playing right field, and he's playing for at least from my eyes, a pretty outstanding defense.
Oh, he's been tremendous out there defensively.
Yeah, but he's hitting, 147 with a .293 on base percentage and a .176 slugging. He did hit a double yesterday. That was well struck. It wasn't one of those Xander doubles. And that's a topic for another time, because man, all the bad luck that everyone else is getting, I think Bogaerts is picking all that. He's picking all the good anyway.
Good for him. He
yeah.
He was he's a little behind on that. He had like no good luck last year.
Yeah, that's true. For an extended period of time. But anyway, so Victorino, who's 34 and is in the last year of a 3-year contract, and I think is paying him $13 million this season. Is playing great defense, but is not hitting. In the minors, the Red Sox have Roosny Castillo, who, last year they signed to a 6-year deal.
7 year.
Well, 6 and part of last year. So,
make 7.
Part of it. Anyway.
Make 7.
All right. Call it what you will. In any case,
7-year deal.
He signed for 6 more years. And, Normandin!
I can't help it.
He's signed for 6 more years, and he is 27 years old, and he is, when he's played really well and hit really well, both in the majors and in spring training and now in AAA. He's also dealing with yet another injury in AAA. I don't think he's back yet.
He was in the clubhouse today.
Okay.
So he's probably getting pretty close to being back.
Okay.
And the minor league DL is
7 days, right?
Yeah, 7 days. So it's pretty much whenever he's ready to come back, there's no wait time.
He was hitting pretty well in AAA before the injury too. As we outlined before, the Red Sox are scoring runs, but there's a significant portion of the lineup that's just not hitting. Now you'd expect a lot of these guys to come around, at least to a certain extent. But, Victorino, with all the injuries he's had, I think there are real questions about how his, how much offense we should expect from him going forward. And so you wanted to know when did they call up Castillo and put him in right field? I don't know, but I would imagine if there was an injury, then that would immediately happen. Again, we're sort of stuck with the Alan Craig thing. There's a, an obvious spot where Castillo could be, and they could sort of rotate him in on a more, I don't know, sort of in and out kind of basis, as opposed to having to make a, having to send a guy to AAA, which is a, much starker way to deal with things. But because of Alan Craig, they don't have space to do that. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, it certainly would help if Alan Craig would show any offensive ability at all.
Well, it'd also help if Craig got to do more than 1.5 at bats,
Yeah, he's
three times
gotten
a
a
week.
lot of playing time, no question about it, but
And he keeps getting inserted into like the middle of games, so.
I think he even got inserted into the middle of an at-bat the other day when, oh no, that was Nava. That's a shame, because that would have been funnier, but yeah.
Yeah, like Craig had to come in cold on Monday, literally cold because it was freezing out.
Right.
When Hanley got pulled with illness early, so it's like, here you go. You didn't prepare at all because it's 11 o'clock in the morning, but
Well,
go get him.
I mean, yes, but it is kind of his job to be prepared. I mean, I'm
Yeah,
sympathetic
I'm
to the
just all
situation.
I'm saying is it's not like he's been given the best opportunities to succeed
No,
either.
I'm totally, yeah, absolutely. He's in a tough situation, and absolutely to his credit, he could have said things at this point, complaining about his role and about, not being moved during the off season, et cetera, et
Especially with
cetera.
current Mike Harp.
Right, yeah, but you haven't heard a peep out of him, in reference to that, and I think that's very admirable. That said, he's not making much of a push for getting extra playing time, and he's not making it any easier to trade him. He's not making it easier to trade himself. I don't know. He's making his performance is making a trade more difficult as opposed to easier.
Well, no, it's not making a trade more difficult. It's making a trade with a return the Red Sox actually care about difficult.
Well, I mean,
You can
okay.
trade him to whoever. Someone's going to take a risk on that.
You think so?
Oh, absolutely. Like, there's so little power in the game, and there's so few first basemen that if the Sox dangle Alan Craig, a bunch of teams will want
Okay.
They just might not give up a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like if they just gave him to the San Francisco Giants, that would be fine. And the Giants just took his contract, and that was that. But I mean, obviously, the Red Sox don't want to give away. We talked about this before. The Red Sox don't want to give away talent. They don't want to just hand over, potentially productive player to another team for no return at all. But the return, I guess, in this case would be, oddly enough, a player they already have. Getting
Roster
Rusney
spot, yeah.
Castillo. Oh, what'd you
Hey,
say?
that matters sometimes. Just opening a roster spot is a big deal. And I mean, we mentioned this earlier, but they want to get a lot back for Alan Craig, but they're not going to hold on to Alan Craig at the expense of their season.
Right.
So, at the last moment when they're forced to lose a player, like they'll lose a player.
Yeah.
So.
So I don't know when that drop dead point is. My guess is at this point Castillo is going to come back. When he's healthy, rush him. And when he's healthy and he comes back, they're going to give him some playing time and see how he hits. And if he's still playing well, then I think you have maybe a call to make at that point. So, if he comes back soon, and I don't know that he's coming back soon, but if he comes back soon, my guess is you're giving him a couple weeks at least in the lineup.
Maybe.
Sorry?
Maybe. They didn't, he didn't even get a couple weeks in the minors last year before they brought him up in the middle of the season.
Yeah. Although, like you said, there is a bit of a different scenario here.
Oh, sure, but
Trying to win now.
last year he didn't play baseball for a year and a half.
Yeah.
And then he played a week and a half in the minors and then he was in the majors. So he's after playing in winter leagues and all that, like he's a little more ready to just jump in.
Right. He's
And
probably
he played
ready
spring
to jump
training,
in. Yeah. So it's just a question of getting him ready. And whenever he is ready, that's when they'll have to make a call. So that gives Victorino some time to turn things around. Maybe the double he hit yesterday is a sign of things to come. you know, it gives Alan Craig some time to, you know, to accumulate some at-bats and get some hits. It's giving us the countdown here, and I'm going to blow right past it, Mark. So not because I have a whole lot more to say, but because I'm just not going to shut it down, like, immediately.
No, I figured. We don't need to tell people that, though.
Oh, well, I'm telling people. I'm telling you. That's what I'm doing.
Well, if we kept talking past the 10-second mark that only you and I can hear, it would have been a pretty good cue for me.
Yeah, maybe.
I mean, I think maybe mid-May is, I would say, the deadline possibly for Victorino to have turned it around. So, you know, a little less than a month from now, maybe. Mm-hmm. They only gave Nava till the end of April last year, and I understand Victorino is making $13 million more than Nava was and is, you know, obviously a defensive presence that Nava is not. But so that's where the extra few weeks come in, I think. But they didn't have a player of Ruthney's potential blocked by Nava last year.
Right.
You know, that was just kind of, well, here's an opportunity to play Mike Karp more, I guess.
Right.
So it's a little different. So I don't know, mid-May seems about right. You know, if you're 6 weeks into the season and you're out, your guy who had back surgery last year and is limited by injuries often is not hitting, and it might be time to make him the fourth outfielder.
Yeah. Yeah, it's possible. I don't know. I mean, his defense has looked really good again in a really small sample.
Oh, it's looked great, but Castillo is a center fielder who will be playing right field, so.
Right.
It's not like, you know, it's not like you're doing that to.
Yeah.
To make room for Nava. Again, not to pick on Nava, but it's not like you're doing that to make room for that. To get a little more offense, you're going to sacrifice defense. Like, yeah, Victorino is probably one of the best right fielders in baseball, but Castillo was a guy who was considered a plus defensive center fielder.
Right.
So there's a really good chance, once he learns the ins and outs of Fenway a little bit, he'll be a great right fielder too.
Yeah, I mean, I guess at this point you probably don't move Betts.
It's kind of he needs to learn center if you want him to play center, and he's not going to learn center in AAA unless you're taking Jackie Bradley out of center,
right?
Which has kind of a cascade effect of. Well, you kind of want Jackie Bradley to keep playing center and hit so that you can trade Jackie Bradley and get something good.
Right.
Or in case people go down again. So, yeah, it's kind of a weird. Betts is in center, should stay in center. Same thing they did with Bogarts last year where just leave him there. You hope everyone else hits so that Betts doesn't have to be a star right away.
Yeah.
And you just give it the time that it needs.
Yeah.
You know, that's why they signed Hanley and Panda, so that it wasn't a repeat of last year where it's like, oh, well, Xander's not hitting and Jackie Bradley's not hitting, and, oh, we're also relying on Will Middlebrooks. And we're, down the line. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Last year. Fun time. All right. Well, it's been an hour, and we've covered everything I think we set out to cover. Is there another topic that we need to hit up?
I'll say, since I mentioned Middlebrooks, man, it's a good thing for, like, our sanity, most likely, that the Sox got Ryan Hannigan for Middlebrooks. Because can you imagine right now with Panda not hitting?
Yeah.
And Middlebrooks has, I don't know, what's he hitting? He's slugging .500 out in San Diego. He's already got three homers. He's got seven extra base hits. He has a 128 OPS plus. I mean, his on-base percentage is garbage, but it's Petco, so, you know, it wasn't good in Fenway, so it's not going to be good in San Diego. But Middlebrooks is playing real well. But the Sox ended up getting a starting catcher out of it, so
yeah.
I feel like we should all be thankful for that, where it's just a deal where, hey, both sides got something they needed. I mean, it's early, too, you know, like Middlebrooks, we've seen him hit before.
We have, for long periods of time.
But just in terms of sanity, not having to listen to people complain about, oh, they shouldn't have given up Middlebrooks, blah, blah, blah. Because
yeah.
If they didn't give up Middlebrooks, well, they'd have a Middlebrooks and they wouldn't have a catcher. starting catcher, Sandy Leon. So.
I don't know. At this point, I think you just put Brock Holt back there.
Hey, you know, who knows? I still want to see him pitch. I mean, I don't want to see the game that results in him having to pitch.
Right.
But next time that opportunity comes up,
I mean, you know it's coming at some point. Not necessarily him pitching, but you know, at some point the Red Sox are going to lose 16-2. I mean, that happens every year. At some point, they're going to win 16-2 and they're going to lose 16-2. That's
last year with Mike Karp. This year, Brock Hall.
Yeah, the really frustrating thing is when they just run out of pitchers, and then both teams are using, like, Brock Holt or whoever.
I love that.
Yeah, I hate that. It drives me up a wall. Because it's just, anyway, whatever, it doesn't matter. All right, so if you've made it this far, and we're still recording, always a question, then, you know, it would be nice if you went to iTunes and said nice things about us. You can do that. You can search Over the Monster Podcast, OTM Podcast, I think gets you there also on the iTunes. You can follow Mark Normandin on the Twitter, Mark_Normandin. You could follow me at MattyMatty2000. We will be back to do this again in the near future, I'm sure. Maybe next week, maybe not, maybe a week after that. Gosh, you never know with us. We're just full of surprises. But, in any case, that's it for us. So we will talk to you guys later. Bye. Yes, end the episode. I do want to end it.